Hi, and welcome to Upcoming Dis. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Nice to talk to you.
Well, it's very nice to talk to you as well, and I had a chance to see that first season of Turn, Washington Spies, and you're on the other side of the fence, though, aren't you?
Well, it depends which side of the fence you're looking at.
Now, I got to ask you a question about your character. You play this Simcoe, but here's the thing. On the credits and some of the other places, I see you listed as a lieutenant, but in the show, I hear you referred to as a captain. So can you clear this up and tell us, what is your rank among these British Redcoats?
At the beginning of this show, he is a lieutenant.
Okay.
And when Captain Joyce is murdered, Simcoe purchases that rank.
Yes. Okay, so you're captain now.
He becomes the captain in the course of episode one.
Okay, so you're a captain basically throughout the first season, however, then.
That's right, yeah. Once he's bought his way into that, he's a fully fledged captain.
Well, now, you know, your character, we were a little concerned whether you were even going to be with us for long, because in the first, you know, couple of episodes already, you're being targeted to be taken out, and you even get captured for quite a while. So you obviously knew you were going to continue in the series, I assume, right?
Well, yes, but originally Simcoe died in the pilot.
Wow.
I mean, not everybody knows. So, yeah, originally Simcoe was... When the ambush at the end of episode one.
Right.
Originally, Caleb Brewster shot Simcoe through the head, and we filmed that.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until months later, once everybody had digested the pilot and looked at all the elements of the show, that the network decided that Simcoe had to stick around. So we rewrote it, reshot it, and that's when I knew I was on the show, and then I knew that Simcoe would find his way out of that captivity somehow, yeah.
Well, and you went from supposedly dying to becoming an important character, because you have,
right.
You're kind of that character that bridges the gap, because you've got this relationship going on with the internal guys with the Redcoats, but you also have this kind of personal grudge with Abraham, who's the main spy here, and is that grudge because of the side he's on? Is it grudge because you see him as a rival for Anna? Or what is this personal grudge that Simcoe seems to have for Abraham?
I think it's both of those things. You know, I think he has an officer's respect for someone like Ben Talmadge.
Yeah.
Someone who puts on a uniform and fights legitimately for another army. And he believes strongly in the Empire, and he thinks that if more people were less like Abe and more like Ben Talmadge, then the world would be a lot more civilized. And so, you know, immediately he has a healthy disrespect for someone like Abraham. But at the same time, you're absolutely right. The grudge is very much to do with the Anna Strong.
Yes.
And Anna Strong triangle that's created with Abraham as well, and so yeah, it's compounded by that, you know. And in a way, you know, and in a way, the focus of Anna almost takes over the initial kind of just empirical and you know, military issue. Like, it's, you know, the love is a very powerful a very powerful draw, you know, in a situation like that. And I think that's, yeah, it's a big problem, really.
And Simcoe, now, he does have this respect, I guess, for this military thing, but he's not afraid to break the rules. In fact, he's, throughout the season, he finds himself very much going against what he's even supposed to do in pursuit of, I guess, what he thinks is right.
That's right. And I think that's the key. It's what he thinks is right. That's why he's so dangerous.
Right.
He's very decisive, and he acts on what he thinks is right, and he has a very, you know, specific, you know, kind of moral compass, which
sure.
is which has consequences if disobeyed, and he acts on it, and in a lethal or brutal manner, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's a big part of who he is. I don't think he would see it as insubordination, you know.
Right.
He sees himself as acting decisively and correctly, and he, you know, and he has a real disrespect for the way Hewlett goes about his business, you know.
Yes.
And I don't think he has a problem with authority, you know. I think he's someone who, excuse me, considers himself the highest status person in any room.
Mm-hmm.
Very dangerous person to be around.
Well, I get the impression anyway that Simcoe's the kind of guy that thinks that things would be going so much better if he were in charge.
Quite right.
And I got to tell you, the show does a wonderful job of some of the authenticity of from the uniforms to the props and stuff. And I got to believe that putting that red coat on and that powdered wig and that uniform and stuff, that has to help you define the character quite a bit, doesn't it?
In a huge way, you know. This is, you know, doing any TV show, any job for that matter.
Right.
You know, whilst the final product, if you like, is a lot to do with the actors in those costumes, you know, to create that world,
sure,
involves massive teamwork and huge expertise. You know, there's only so much research that an actor has time to do,
right,
if they're inclined to do it. And one of the things that we rely heavily on this show is the expertise of the team around us. For example, the costumes department led by Donna, you know, is the level of research that goes into, you know, the majority of these costumes have been made from scratch, by the way.
Wow.
From just hours and hours of research, and the skill and talent that goes into producing those is extraordinary. And you slip that costume on, and absolutely it changes the way you stand, the way you feel, you know, it moves in a way that your normal clothes don't move. You know, all of the costumes have an energy of their own, and you know, and it helps, you know, and it's also the first thing that the audience sees before you open your mouth.
Yes.
They see what you're wearing, they know, it signifies who you are and where you are in the world. You know, likewise, you know, with, like, the weaponry, for example.
Mm-hmm.
There's no good reason why I should know how an 18th century bayonet works. Trust me, there's a guy always on hand who does. So, and that, you know, and it filters through every department on the show. And we're very, very lucky that we have such dedicated and passionate people on the crew and on the team to do that. Because, you know, the authenticity of the show owes everything. To that. So yeah, it's a massive team effort, but putting on those costumes, as you asked, is it has a massive impact on how you move and how you feel, and also makes it really difficult to get on a horse.
I'll bet. It must be hot as well. It looks hot, at least to me.
Yeah, it is hot. Luckily, or unluckily, we film in the middle of January, so it's not really too much of a problem.
So maybe it helped that it was hot.
Say again?
As in, maybe it helped that the uniforms were very warm.
Yes, we're thankful, but there's still a need for thermals.
Well, and the other question, you kind of alluded to it a little bit with the great staff you guys have to create the authenticity of the show. Was there anything particularly that you did do to prepare yourself for the part?
Yeah, I mean, in England, you don't get taught anything about the Revolutionary War. There's a very good reason for that. and so I was really coming from a very weak knowledge base. So I did a lot of reading generally on the period and on the ins and outs of the war, and then you know, and then I wanted to know a lot about you know, what it was. What the perspective of the British soldier at this time was. And, of course, you know, I'm playing a real guy, which helps. So, you know, there's a lot of access to information on who he actually was.
Yes.
And then apart from that, you know, I had lots of in-depth discussions with the props department and all of these, and the costumes department, people who had also done a mound of research in their areas. And you know, we're like, you know, we're scavenging for things that can help with time. So, you know, you pick up bits and pieces as you're going on. You know, and then there's sort of practical things like horse riding.
Yeah.
You know, so there was a lot of horse riding practice. Lucas took place, but it's really there's also a point, of course, where you have to play the script and not the history book. You know?
Exactly.
So, there's a point where we get our scripts where I tend to put the history book down and just deal with the script. But yeah, there's a lot of research that goes into it, and we're lucky as well that the actors on mm-hmm. the show are actors who like to do that, and so everybody has come from with a good amount of knowledge on who they are in the world and why they're there. So yeah, but it was really the physical stuff was kind of like the horse riding was a big
right.
focus. We end up doing a lot of that, and you've got to sort of like you know what you're doing.
Sure. Well, I think you're right about the perspective stuff, and I think the good actors really realize that, because you're right, when you look at it from different perspectives, you know, you're talking about seeing it from a British point of view. I actually taught American history, and I have a British textbook of the time period, and where we called the American Revolution, the British textbook called it the Colonial Rebellion. So, and it's a and it's still a modern book, but the perspectives make the character, I think. You know, I've never... Villains don't know that they're villains or don't believe that they're villains. And Simcoe, even though he does some pretty horrendous things, I don't get the impression he thinks he's doing horrendous things.
That's exactly right. And I think it's so important to making someone... You know, because someone as vicious as that can often come across two-dimensionally.
Yeah.
And the key to it not being that is creating a living, breathing human being that has thoughts and feelings like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just because they're different to the way normal people in the bird covers behave, that doesn't matter. That's what makes them interesting and different. But I think if you just play an evil entity,
mm-hmm.
it's not nowhere near as interesting. So that's absolutely right. And also, speaking about, the perspectives, one of the, fascinating things...
Yeah.
When we talk about wars and historically about these things, mm-hmm. we're talking often in like big broad strokes about the movement of troops here and the battle that took place here,
right.
and that kind of thing. And when you start reading into the day to day of this war,
mm-hmm.
a lot of it was like they didn't have any shoes, so they couldn't move anywhere. It was like mm-hmm. really kind of how did they get through the winter? A lot of the that really mattered was
sure.
about the health and of the troops that you were spying on.
Sure.
how equipped are they to A, launch an attack? Are they well enough to move? All of that information was crucial at this time. And that's a particularly fascinating
mm-hmm.
area of it, and hopefully we draw on that a little bit.
Well, and I don't know if it's the way the character was written or particularly how you decided to play it, but Simcoe also comes across as a character that has a lot of good natural instincts. I mean, he has this bad feeling about Abraham, even though no one around him suspects, what he is, and he doesn't really have the solid evidence to suspect that. So when you make those decisions, is that something that you guys talked about the character having, or is that something you read into the character, that he has these instincts and just feels like this, there's something wrong with this guy?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, a lot of it's in the writing.
Yeah.
The character in the original pilot was...
Well, he was going to die.
But he was going to die, and it was also kind of... it was kind of... I'm trying to pick the right word. I'm thinking sparsely written.
Mm-hmm.
Economically written is the right word.
There you go.
And so there was a lot... In other words, there was a lot of room for me to come... with something to the table. The mm-hmm. character wasn't overwritten, is what I'm saying.
Right.
So it wasn't, and there was a lot of choices to me as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, a lot of conversations with Barry and Craig, the producers, and Craig Silverstone,
sure.
who wrote the show, about what I wanted to do with it. And once we decided where I was going to go with it, when the show got picked up and everything, the writers really took what I brought to table and ran with it, within the tram lines of where they were going with the story, and so that's how
yeah.
we developed Simcoe. We've done it together, really.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's been so great and so satisfying about it for me as an actor, is that, I brought something to the table and they've kind of gone and run with it and brought me this incredible writing back
right.
in return.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really exciting. exciting for that. And but it's a real, you know, it's a joint venture. If it goes right, it's a joint venture, you know.
Yeah.
The actors bring something and the writers are responding and vice versa, you know. And,
sure.
And now, I'm so, you know, so exciting to receive each episode.
Yeah.
You know something good's coming.
Well, and that brings me to my last question here, and that is, as we get into the second season coming out, where would you like to see Simcoe go? What would you like to see most importantly happen with Simcoe in season two?
Well, we've filmed season two now, so.
Oh, well, okay, so you know more than we do now.
That's right. So I know what's coming. What I can tell you about season two is that
okay.
We've now established, you know, the show, the characters, and the Culper Ring is set up,
right?
Pretty much, and so now the spy show really gets going,
mm-hmm.
And the war really, ups in intensity.
Yeah.
So we're gonna. It's a much more high velocity season. Season two. It really everything gets turned up to 10, and the spying becomes much more daring, much more active. Simcoe, well, we'll see how he gets out of his current predicament with Hewlett and where that goes.
Right.
But we know that he doesn't let go of a grudge.
Right.
Learn that, and we're going to see more of that. And then we're also going to see the military prowess of Simcoe and how effective he can be. And how useful it is to have such a ruthless guy in a position of high command. That's what's coming down the pike.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what's next for your character in the show, and also just to remind people that the first season's now out on Blu-ray and DVD, so you have a chance to catch up on those first season episodes if you missed it, and get yourself ready for season two, because it sounds like it's going to be a heck of a ride.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us, and I hope you have a great day.
My pleasure. Take care. See you soon.
You too. Take care.